welcome to tonight's program. No video streaming tonight for a number of reasons, but welcome to the program anyway. Glad you could make it. Stick around as we once again sink beneath the waves of right-wing horse crap. You know what's going on? It occurred to me today, again, yet continuously, with this monstrous event in the Gulf of Mexico, we're seeing the total control that corporate America has over everything. Everything. In this instance, the oil companies, and it's not just BP. Don't forget the crisis caused by Exxon and the sleazy way those bastards escaped any serious liability over the past 20 years. And Republicans in the Senate are refusing to consider the liability cap on these predators. That cap is now set at $75 million. That's all they're responsible for, an amount that is completely insignificant. That's lunch money, given the massive scope of this tragedy. But the oil companies, like several other massive corporate predator capitalist gangs, have bought off everybody in Congress, almost everybody, 90% of them. We'll leave a little wiggle room there. Not only did they buy off the members of Congress with their filthy campaign contributions, but the predators, the capitalists, also bought off the regulatory agencies, people who don't have to run for office, people who are appointed to office, sometimes with the consent of the Senate, sometimes not. The regulators, take the financial services industry is a classic example. The oil industry, the telecommunications industry, the coal industry. What else? I go right down the list. Anyone who doubts that we have become a corporatist society is probably a Republican with his head firmly or her head firmly up his rectum, because that's where we are. That's just where we are. And the senator from Alaska, Lisa Murkowski, she's one of those Republicans. I think all of them are against the effort by the Democrats to raise the cap on these damage claims that BP has to pay. It was blocked today because Republicans said the plan wouldn't work. It won't work. It really won't. Senator Lisa Murkowski, who is a Republican from Alaska, led the charge against this measure. And her rationale, along with the other Republican pigs, was that independent offshore oil developers would not be able to stay in business under the legislation because small companies wouldn't be able to self-insure against claims. All right, now, how many things in that sentence are madness? In the first place, the last small family-owned oil company I'm aware of was Arbusto, that was run by George W. Bush as a front to give him some kind of a job to keep his ass away from the cocaine. And then he was bought out, of course, or backed or subsidized or taken over by the Saudis, the same people that came to this country and destroyed the lives of 3,000 people. But there's no such thing as a small family-owned offshore drilling company. I mean, Jesus God. But Lisa Murkowski knows what most of these Senate pigs know, that the American public, the ones that elect them anyway, are stupider than a handful of dog droppings. So they can say things like that. Small companies wouldn't be able to self-insure against claims. The other part of the madness in that sentence is what claims? The oil industry itself has assured us that their systems are fail-safe. A massive eruption in the Gulf, or even a spill, which this is not, couldn't occur. Just couldn't, because the technology, the science is so profoundly developed. I mean, my God, we put a man on the moon 40 years ago, right? So this stuff is easy. It's so easy that when the impossible does happen, you fix it by throwing mattresses and tires and golf balls down the hole. That's how sophisticated the offshore oil exploration company has become. Murkowski said, quote, the only companies that are going to be able to self-insure against the level of strict liability, this level of strict liability, are the national oil companies, the super majors, end quote. The only ones who are going to be able to self-insure against this level of strict liability. Strict? Strict, Lisa? $10 billion? That's not even a month's profit or 2 months' profit to these oil companies. Strict? She added that since the little family-owned companies, you know, mom and pop and Bruce and Sally, since they wouldn't be able to operate, this would create a monopoly on offshore drilling among giant companies like BP. Oh, no! She said, quote, we need to ensure that BP, as the responsible party, pays, which is a total non sequitur as to what we're talking about here. We're talking about liability. The Obama White House came out ahead of the vote with an announcement yesterday because the Republicans in the Senate have killed this, you see. 51 votes doesn't mean anything, so it's been killed. But the Obama White House came out ahead of the vote with an announcement yesterday with proposed legislation to allow the federal government to collect more damages from companies responsible for the spill. But according to Dow Jones Newswires, but the Obama administration didn't propose a specific increase in the cap on damages. Well, you know, we'll leave it up to the free market or something. And on Thursday, today, the Obama administration refrained from offering support for the measure from Senator Bill Nelson, Democrat of Florida, Bob Menendez, Democrat of New Jersey, Frank Lautenberg, Democrat of New Jersey. They're the ones that want to raise the cap from $75 million, which is lunch money, to these behemoth bastards, to $10 billion. $10 billion is insane, insanely small. The damage to the coast is going to be, call it $1 trillion. Do you know what $10 billion is as a component or factor of $1 trillion? Huh? So now, since there's no support from the White House, the Democrats must now go back to the drawing board. Bill Nelson said in a statement, quote, I'm really disappointed some of my colleagues decided to block the legislation, that would be the Republicans, to hold BP accountable for this disaster. He said, we need to raise the cap to $10 billion, and I'm not sure $10 billion is even going to be enough, end quote. So that's the one, two, that's the one punch. There's a second punch right to the solar plexus of the American public. That was punch one from the corporate capitalist bastards. Punch two in just a minute. Stay with us. It's and the thunder tape.
yourself with the truth. It's More Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. So, the first punch in this 1-2 punch from corporate America into the gut of this country where it concerns this oil disaster, which is going to continue and continue. This oil is going to continue to gush into the Gulf, and the attendant chaos and poison and death and destruction is just going to continue. It should be apparent now. There's no stopping this. Punch number one. No, the Republicans say we're not going to raise the liability from $75 million to $10 billion. Oh, no, we can't do that. That would piss off our owners, the people who own us. The second kick is Transocean Limited, the offshore contractor that owns Deepwater Horizon floating drilling rig. By the way, it's based in Switzerland, of course. Transocean Limited has asked a federal court in Houston to limit its liability from the oil spill to less than $27 million. Your Honor, we don't want to pay more than $27 million. Now, how are they doing this? Well, what's the basis for their claim in court or their petition in court? Well, they are invoking a little-known maritime law passed in 1851. Based on that law, Transocean Limited said it should not have to pay any more than the salvage value of the burned oil rig and its freight, all of which sank in 5,000 feet of water after the explosion on the 20th of April that killed 11 workers. Now, before the accident, the Deepwater Horizon was valued at more than $500 million. But Transocean Limited says, well, you know, we only have to pay the salvage value because there's this law from 1851. Wow. You see how capitalism works? You see? 11 dead workers. Screw them. Let's get the live workers together and get their stories straight. Come on, boys, get their stories straight. $75 million liability. Oh, no, 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 no. Way too much, way too much, way too much. Can't do it, can't do it. Where's the law? Quick, get the lawyers. Look through. Look, go on. I don't care. Go back 200 years. Keep going, keep going, keep going. Oh, there it is.
A law passed in 1851.
That says a company should not have to pay any more than the salvage value. Now, since we know there were no drilling rigs in 1851, what were they talking about, for God's sake?
Sailing ships? Ships loaded with slaves?
Gold? Spices? Tobacco? Cotton?
1851.
Lawyers for those injured in the blast said the petition by Transocean Limited in a court in Houston could also prevent any claims filed more than 6 months after the accident. Huh? This is like the child molestation laws. You were 6 years old and your uncle molested you? He did? How old are you now? You're 25. Well, I'm sorry, sweetheart. You were only able to file a complaint for 7 years after your uncle molested you. Sorry. A Houston attorney who represents a handful of Transocean employees who were injured in the blast said this is very unfair. It's a slap in the face to anyone who's been injured because of their negligence. No, it's not a slap in the face, sir. It's a kick in the gut. This is what capitalism does. God damn it, what do I have to do to educate you lawyers, huh? Come on. It's not a slap in the face. It is a boot on the side of the head. A la 1984. You want to see the future? O'Brien said to Winston Smith, you want to see the future? I'll show you the future. The future is a boot stepping on someone's face. So here we are. The filing by Transocean, of course, they waited until the hearings were over, didn't they? Oh, you sleazy little bastards. Ah, how about that? Transocean waited until one of their top execs was sitting up there in front of the Senate saying, no, 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 it wasn't me, it was him. It wasn't us, we didn't do anything. The Transocean filing comes as the Obama administration and Congress are trying to get some retroactive increase in the amount of liability. You know what their chances are? Zero.
Practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. So we are going to get back to the this calamity, this horrendous event that is that continues in the Gulf of Mexico. And again, isn't it, I don't know who this is surprising to, conservatives or Republicans or teabaggers, whatever the hell they are now, are too busy trying to find Barack Obama's birth certificate to understand what is occurring here. But are we into the fourth week yet? We're getting close to it, aren't we, of an unrelenting gusher volcano of oil sloughing into the Gulf of Mexico. And corporate America is doing nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Nothing. We get back to it. How's this for a surprise? Laura Bush says she and her husband were on opposite sides of the issue of gay marriage and abortion rights. She was on Larry King Live the other night. She says she totally understands what George thinks and what other people think about marriage being between a man and a woman. She went on to say, but I also know that, you know, when couples are committed to each other and love each other, that they ought to have, I think, the same sort of rights that everyone has, end quote. Larry King said, you think legalization of same-sex marriage is coming? Laura Bush, citing a generational shift in opinion on the issue, replied, yeah. That will come, I think. And she also said she believes abortion should remain legal, and she's held that view for years. She recalled telling an interviewer on the day that George took office after he stole the presidency in 2001 that she did not think Roe v. Wade should be overturned. She told Larry King the other night, this was the very morning my husband was about to be inaugurated, and I thought, do I really want to start my husband's presidency, you know, suggesting that a Supreme Court rule being overturned? And I said no. She said abortion is, quote, important for medical reasons and other reasons. Well, Laura Bush obviously is no longer the darling, if she ever was, of the flying monkey right. She is in favor of same-sex marriage and in favor of a woman's right to privacy. Wouldn't it have been wonderful had she been able to use her position as the First Lady to push for that when she was in the White House?
If I were married to George, I'd be in favor of same-sex marriage, too.
Probably.
And if those were my kids...
No, don't.
Certainly supporting right to privacy,
That's okay.
What I would know now
okay.
that I didn't know then.
Okay.
Because I'll tell you what, nothing would turn me quicker lesbian than facing that man in bed every day.
Okay. Some more total insanity from conservatives and Republicans. This especially shows their real irrelevance to just day-to-day life in this country, to anything that matters. It shows also, what I'm about to share with you, their total lack of ideas or the ability to govern or priorities or morality or ethics, all of it. Polls are showing that Americans, of course, are real anxious about federal deficits, which is hog's nut. We should no more be anxious about deficits than anxious about little green men coming from outside the solar system. Really. I mean, it can be handled with a couple of keystrokes. But anyway, we're deeply anxious about federal deficits and claim to be frustrated with increased federal spending. I have yet to find anybody except the ultra wealthy. And even they are not necessarily upset with increased federal spending because no matter what happens, the capitalists make fortunes. So who's upset, frustrated with increased federal spending? Who is anxious about federal deficits? The people that watch Fox, the people that follow the suicide man, Glenn Beck, the people who don't understand anything about the economic system in this country and what's become of it. They don't understand what capitalism is all about. Capitalism is about capital, and capital will not ever allow itself to fail. Deficits? Oh, that means nothing. Federal spending? Bah, means nothing. But anyway, Republicans, since they know that Americans are anxious and frustrated about what they know not, House Republicans, this would be John Boehner and the rest of these thugs, have launched a website where you can go vote to cut spending for the one federal program that you think is out of control. Yeah, you can go vote. The Republicans are going to let you tell them what you want cut. And once they complete this, once the votes are tallied online next week, Republicans say they will then introduce a bill on the House floor to cut the program that gets the most votes. I'm not making this up, okay? Now, the program is called U-Cut. Y-O-U-C-U-T. U-Cut. And it lists five federal programs as candidates for elimination, described in Republican-friendly lingo as, you ready? Here's one, taxpayer-subsidized union activities. Woo! That's a biggie, huh? Here's number two, the presidential election fund. Woo! Another biggie. Here's number three, a housing and urban development program for doctoral dissertations. Oh, no! That one's sucked in trillions! And the fifth one, your fourth one, new, non-reformed welfare programs. Oh, yeah? What would they be? Temporary assistance for needy families? Something? Oh, and the fifth one? Block grants for wealthier communities. Now, let me think. A wealthy community that recently got a block grant. Do, 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 do. I can't think of one. Now, after the votes are tallied next week, the Republicans will introduce a bill to cut the program that gets the most votes. Representative Paul Ryan, a Republican from Wisconsin. Wisconsin? The top Republican on the House Budget Committee and one of the Republicans behind this idea said the purpose of the website where you can go vote is to involve voters in the budget process. Representative Ryan said this. He really did. Quote,
"We want to engage the American people in a process to help us change the culture of spending here in Washington."
Well, Mr. Ryan, I know where you could save billions, tens of billions, hundreds of billions. The defense budget. But I digress. Even if all five programs on this little goofball site are eliminated, all five of them are eliminated, the savings would amount to $6 billion out of a $3.5 trillion federal budget. Now, $1 trillion is 1,000 billion. So we have 3,500 billion. And the Republicans are going to cut $6 billion out of 3,000 billion. Six. Go vote. Go to the website and vote. Oh, my goodness. Tell us what we should cut. Taxpayer-subsidized union activities. That's a terrible one. The Presidential Election Fund. The real spending, of course, is embedded in the two-thirds of the budget dedicated to non-discretionary entitlement programs, as they are called in the lingo, including Social Security and Medicare. Huh? Yeah? The real spending. Eh? What about weaponry? What about murder machines? What about death and destruction and bombs and drones and nukes? Ah! Representative Eric Cantor, Republican of Virginia, declined to suggest any large federal programs for the cuts on his little toy website. But he said that the website is just a start to a new approach to federal spending by Republicans. He said, quote,
"Cuts are not always popular, but that's why we're taking this step. It's time for us to be adults." End quote.
Eric. It's way past time for you to be an adult, you half-witted jerk. Oh, and House Minority Leader John Boehner promised today that if Republicans take control of the House in November, he will make significant cuts to federal spending levels. I'm going to cut everything except the subsidies to tanning salons. That's off the table.
It's a wonderful life. No stress, no strife, never hurry, never worry. Rich and young, one might wonder what great things they've done to become the fortunate ones. They're the happy members of the lucky sperm club. The only thing they have to do is be conceived.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. Email from Joanna in California. Mike, I represent injured or killed workers in the California workers' compensation system. The survivors of those dead 11 employees from the oil rig who were blown to kingdom come will initially only get the workers' comp, the death benefits, workers' comp death benefits, approximately $150,000. And of course, there must be others who were injured. However, the more I think about this, this is not about negligence. It's about strict liability and serious and willful misconduct on the employer, on the part of the employer. Both provide considerably higher liability for defendants and higher damages for plaintiffs. Let's face it, BP and friends are engaged in an activity which cannot be made safe. That's why the government ends up indemnifying the nuclear power plants. If not for that, they would not be built. operating nuclear power plants and drilling a mile or more at the bottom of the ocean are inherently dangerous activities that cannot be made safe. That is the definition of strict liability. Even in workers' comp, they may be able to get them for serious and willful misconduct of the employer, which will give the injured and dead workers and the survivors a higher recovery. Additionally, as there are third parties involved, depending on who they worked for, BP, Transocean, or Halliburton, in tort, all three of these companies are jointly liable. Each and all are liable for all damages. The injured workers or dead worker survivors can file civil tort suits against the non-employers. For example, if one of these people worked for BP, they can also file suit against Transocean and Halliburton. Now you know why the Republicans want tort reform. This madness will be going on for 20 to 30 years before it gets to the Roberts Supreme Court, where their liability on the part of these corporations will be staunched. Sickening, isn't it? And let's not forget all the economic damages that were foreseeable. That is what Mike Papantonio is going after onshore. Joanna in California. Jesus, God. But the control, the absolute control. You know, we used to look for relief to the courts. But the court system now has become so corrupted, so absolutely corrupted, from the Supreme Court through the appellates, the entire federal system is absolutely owned by corporate America, as is the legislative branch, as is the executive branch. But it used to be the court system where people who were grievously injured or killed could find relief, not from being dead, but the financial consequences for the survivors. Daddy was blown up in a mine. Okay, what happens next? Well, in the bad old days, they would give the widow maybe 6 weeks' pay, and when that ran out, you're going to have to move, lady. We own the house, and we're going to bring in another worker's family. Well, the unemployment comp was stuck in there, as Joanna talks about, writes about. That's what she does. Liability of corporations. There's an attempt made. Okay, look, if somebody gets their arms and legs blown off, shouldn't it be more than just workers' compensation, especially if the corporation was responsible? Literally responsible. Well, let's pass laws. Okay. Because capitalism, as I've said on this program a trillion times, capitalism is about capital. It's not about people. It's not about families. It's not about life. It is about nothing but the development of capital, the enrichment that comes from working with capital, and it's reserved for the people at the top of the heap. Capitalism is not for workers. Wages and death and destruction and sickness and mesothelioma and oil wells blowing up and mines collapsing, that is for the workers. The capital goes to the people at the top of the heap. Always has. Always will. So there have been some attempts, yes, over the history, the sad history of working men and working women's rights in this country. Some attempt to offer a little bit of protection. Some attempt to offer a little bit of compensation when they die. Some attempt to keep children out of the mines and the steel mills. Some attempt to make sure that people who are willing to put 8-10 hours a day into a factory, we get a working living wage. Some attempt to do this. Fought tooth and nail every single goddamn inch of the way by capitalist America. Every single inch. To the point where they were planning on assassinating FDR. To the point where they wanted to make an alliance with Adolf Hitler. That's how corrupt capitalism is. There is not one single redeeming value to that system, that economic system. It is predatory and it is destructive. Meanwhile, while we sit here and chat on the Malloy program, and oh God, stick around for what I have coming next. As we sit here and chat on the Malloy program, the volcano of oil continues to destroy the Gulf of Mexico with a very clear possibility now, not a probability, not yet, but a possibility. It may be remote, but a possibility. A possibility that as this well continues, as this hole in the earth continues, the end result is going to be destruction on a level that you and I, not only we can't contemplate, we dare not contemplate. And I'll have that story for you when we come back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. We are focused once again tonight on what could be the end of the earth. Oh, is that so such a hyperbole, Mr. Malloy? This horrible situation that now enters its fourth week in the Gulf of Mexico. A gusher, a volcano, a mountain, an endless pool of oil gushing into the Gulf of Mexico. It's now approaching land. It's getting very close. And nothing has been done to stop it. Nothing. I think it was last week that I read an article, shared an article with you by Paul Noel. Remember the guy? He's the software engineer for the U.S. Army at Redstone Arsenal, Alabama. He's a founding member of the New Energy Congress. And I got a lot of people who requested that. I think we put a link to that up then, didn't we, Kathy? I think we did. Here is another piece from Paul Noel with Sterling Allen writing for Pure Energy Systems News. And he starts out with a little preamble. A new video showing the largest hole from the pipe, 5 feet in diameter, spewing oil and natural gas at 4 barrels per second, along with analysis of the amount of oil on the surface, supports the estimates closer to 1 million barrels per day erupting from this hole BP popped in the ocean floor. A hole that contains trillions of barrels of oil and natural gas. Now what they had to say. Mainstream reports are starting to discuss the fact that the oil slick rising from the oil well blowout in the Gulf of Mexico simply has to be a whole lot larger than first reported. My first report on this stated that the total could easily be 5,000 barrels per day. I said this when the report was that only 1,000 barrels per day was the stated total. I was being cautious because I knew the total was much higher, and I knew the public would not believe the real totals. Most people simply could not imagine a well of the size involved. Now I will discuss the real facts that are known and what the educated guesses on the topic indicate. Prepare to get your jaw off the floor. The facts are stunning. BP estimated a spill of 165,000 barrels per day would not even reach land. That is what they told the U.S. government before they drilled the well. They had excellent science on their side, which you can begin to comprehend when you understand how oil reacts in salt water. The fact that the spill has reached land clearly states that the size of the spill is probably well above 200,000 barrels per day. Yes, that's barrels, not gallons. And there are 42 gallons per barrel. To get a full estimate, we have to look at the process of sinking an oil slick and count money. A newly released video of the larger of the two leaks also contributes to our understanding of a minimum estimate of the flow erupting from this man-induced volcano of oil. Here is what happens when oil hits the salt water. If it is poured on top of the sea, oil begins to do several things. First, some of it dissolves in the salt water. This dissolving is a bit limited, but amounts to several percent per day of the spill exposure to the ocean. Some of the oil evaporates. This is several percent per day. This slows over time. As the oil dissolves and evaporates, the parts that do this are primarily volatile fractions. These are things like gasoline and other light components that go away pretty quickly. Once these are gone, the remaining oil is heavy fraction crude. This begins to sink into the water very slowly, eventually falling to the ocean bottom over about 6 weeks. Typically, this floats into an area where the shoreline is and embeds about 18 inches deep in the sand. This buried oil is not harmless. Just because the beach might appear on the surface to be clear, the subsurface oil continues its toxic work. It locates precisely where the little sea creatures live, and it goes on killing them for about 10 years. The reason a slick would carry farther than predicted is that the salt water is saturated with oil, and the air around it is saturated, so the slick cannot dissipate. In the case of the BP Gulf leak, the size of the slick and the location of onshore oil say this slick represents at least two times the amount of oil BP estimated would never reach land, or 330,000 barrels per day minimum. This is an educated guess, borne out by aerial photos and the like. In the case of the BP underwater hole, the slick is not being poured on top of the water. It is coming up from the ocean bottom, that is 1 mile deep at that point. That fact raises stunning questions on how big the well releases are. Rising through 5,000 feet of water, the oil is going through a process that the oil men call fractioning. Literally, the tremendous pressure and temperature issue are the equivalent of taking the oil and boiling it in a cracking tower 5,000 feet high. The oil and natural gas change on their way up. The very light, easy-to-evaporate parts are all that is rising to the surface. The heavy oil isn't even getting to the top. That oil is losing its volatile fractions and is being dragged along with the rising column into the surface water, where it is probably distributing as tar balls that are not being skimmed up or burned or otherwise dispersed. In fact, the chemicals added at the wellhead to disperse the oil speed this process up. This oil is mixed into the water for the top 250 feet or so. Salinity and temperature issues probably keep this oil from ever reaching the very top of the water. The exact behavior here will not be known until studies are published some years from now. This is the first time humans have encountered a deep ocean leak of this magnitude. We are in uncharted territory here. Volume per volume, it is highly probable that due to this fractioning, this oil blowing into the ocean from a mile down is causing far more ecological trouble than a surface spill of similar size. It is also certain that the slick volume on the surface is substantially lower than the rising column of oil. This is a key point to bear in mind. Because of this fractioning, what you see from the air on the surface of the water represents maybe just 20% of the volume of the various types of oil in that area. And we're talking an area the size of Maryland, 10,000 plus square miles that is on the surface. The remaining 80% is under the surface, and all of it is highly toxic to the living organisms encountered. All of this brings into serious question the volumes of oil rising. Every factor suggests massively higher numbers than what has been commonly reported. As we see photos and videos from the air and ground or sea level, we can agree with the comment, "The Gulf appears to be bleeding," which is chilling considering the prophecy in Revelation 8:8, quote, "The second angel sounded his trumpet, and something like a huge mountain all ablaze was thrown into the sea. A third of the sea turned into blood. A third of the living creatures in the sea died, and a third of the ships were destroyed," end quote. Most ships cannot travel through oil-infested waters without damage, any more than jets can fly through volcanic ash-infested airways. More in a minute.
Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. We're quoting from Paul Knoll with Sterling Allen, who wrote this for Pure Energy Systems News. Continuing. There's also another factor that says that the numbers are vastly higher than published to date, the numbers of the amount of oil gushing into the Gulf. That is money. That's the other factor. The BP investment in this well is very high, close to $1 billion. They must earn over $5 million a day off of the well in order to pay back their investment. That was before the explosion and doesn't count the cleanup costs and so forth. They were, until the well blew, extremely happy with the well. In fact, on the day of the explosions, executives were on board celebrating the well's success. This well had to produce over 60,000 barrels a day in order to break even. Shocking as it seems, this well would have been disposed of had it produced a minor total like 20,000 barrels a day. That would have been a so-called dry hole. It wouldn't have paid for the pipes to bring the oil to market. The fact that BP management was aboard the rig and very happy, celebrating just prior to the explosion, says the well probably produces more than 200,000 barrels per day. It might well have produced 500,000 barrels per day or more. Royalties to the U.S. government multiply the numbers for break even by about 2 to 1. So 500,000 barrels per day is very realistic. And that is what they would have been celebrating while things were under control. With this in mind, remember that this well is running wild. A wild well produces far more than a well during normal production. This is why it is so dangerous. The conclusions for how much is coming up are simply unbelievable. The natural gas emissions are stunning as well. As you watch the film, remember the pipe is 5 feet in diameter. The natural gas doesn't just bubble to the top of the ocean and release into the air. It is absorbed into the water, like air is absorbed, and actually creates oxygen depletion. Hence, the emission of natural gas of these volumes into the sea is producing a significant area of oxygen-depleted water in the Gulf of Mexico, which may be a very large threat to fisheries and other wildlife in the area. Never forget this point. The spill was, quote, impossible, end quote, by the view of the oil men prior to this. The biggest cost of the spill cleanup is being borne by the U.S. armed forces, such as the National Guard. None of these costs will ever be paid by BP. These costs will appear in taxes, not in the price of oil. Alternative oil is vastly cheaper and safer than this. Having just seen, as I write, the film of the larger of the two leaks undersea, I can say with my trained eye that the volume coming out of the hole is in the order of 4 barrels per second, around 350,000 barrels per day. As you look at this, it might seem like a small hole and a small amount of oil. But bear in mind that the diameter of the pipe is 5 feet wide. Those deep sea drilling rigs don't make small diameter holes like you might be used to seeing on land. Some of those huge drilling rigs, which make an aircraft carrier look like a toy boat in comparison, put down huge pipe. The rig that is on site now, Development Driller 3, which is drilling a relief hole to reduce pressure from the hole dug by Deepwater Horizon, has a torque, a drill twisting rating, of 78,450 foot-pounds. You who know torque will appreciate how huge that is. Yes, the hole opening is 5 feet in diameter, spewing approximately 4 barrels each second. This is not a system in stasis. This is an out-of-control volcano of oil spewing up with 70,000 pounds per square inch behind it from a reservoir nearly the size of the Gulf, with an estimated trillions of barrels of oil and gas tucked away. What we are seeing now could be small compared to what may yet unfold if things break apart, as they can do under such circumstances. If this thing blew, it would be like the Yellowstone caldera, except from below a mile of sea, with a quarter-mile opening, with up to 150,000 pounds per square inch of oil and natural gas behind it. That would be an extinction event. It is not likely to happen, but it is within the realm of possibilities. That's the kind of stuff we're playing with here. When we humans go tinkering around with this stuff, it is like the movie of men flying spaceships to asteroids and setting off nuclear bombs to deflect them from hitting Earth. Except in this case, setting off a nuclear bomb on top of a veritable volcano spewing oil from what is presently a relatively small hole in order to shut it off doesn't seem like a very good idea. More when we come back.
You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the...
Show. Talk radio matters here.
25 before the hour, we are quoting from an article by Paul Knoll and Sterling Allen, written for Pure Energy Systems News, about this volcano of oil that is still erupting in the Gulf. And as he points out, if this reservoir under the sea blows, it could be like the Yellowstone caldera. I'm sure most of you know what that is. Except from below a mile of sea with a quarter mile long opening, with up to 150,000 pounds per square inch of oil and natural gas behind it, this would be an extinction event. It is not likely to happen, but it is within the realm of possibility. This is the kind of stuff we're playing with. I have a pond in my yard. It holds about 400,000 gallons of water when it's full. I can pump into it with a garden hose over 10,000 gallons of water per day. The hose is 5/8 of an inch in diameter, which gives me 35 pounds per square inch. Summer months, I often do this to keep the fish alive. In barrels of oil, my pond is just about 1,000 barrels. The pond is about 9 feet deep and about 75 feet across. I think if you realize that the oil slick in the Gulf of Mexico covers about now 9,000 square miles, and it is growing, you have no trouble at all realizing the real size of the oil supply feeding it. I knew this from the very start of the fire. Spilling the equal of 5 times my pond of oil, 5,000 barrels per day, would not have even bothered the Gulf of Mexico. It naturally has seeps, natural leaks of oil, that leak more oil than that per day. The volcano of oil down there is very much larger than that. There is no way to get the size of this in mind. It is just too big to imagine. The slick is now as large as Maryland and growing. It will grow probably for 90 days or more. Even if contained tomorrow, it will set the record for the biggest in history. Here is a fairly safe estimate of the economic damage to tourism, fisheries, and the like in the three U.S. states, Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana over the next 10 years. This is going to cost about $1 trillion. BP will not pay this. This does not count damage to ports and trades and trade generally. There is no way out now. What do Texas and Florida get? How about the East U.S. coast or even parts of Mexico? Does this go all the way to damaging England and the Northern European Union? It certainly will not stop with just those three states, Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana. Imagine how much alternative energy work that would have produced. Now, it is all waste. Now, we must do it while it is difficult. Imagine how easily it would have been a year or two ago when it was argued that this well was too expensive. We have to turn around from this and never look back. Freedom, prosperity, and happiness will not be found in that eruption of oil in the Gulf of Mexico. Some think I am against the oil industry. Actually, I view them, the rig workers, not the executives, as some of the bravest, most heroic people we have ever seen on Earth. I have to say this plainly, I am in awe of many of the things they accomplish. I just know that we must get a brighter future because this one has no hope. Paul Knoll is a software engineer, contractor for the U.S. Army at Redstone Arsenal, Alabama. Now, after I shared with you his first article a week or so ago, and I had several people write to me and say, well, you know, who is this guy and what's he about and this can't be true and so on and so forth. So we put a link up at the website. Didn't we, Kathy? We put a link up. And I said, you know, here's the article. You can research it until you get a nosebleed. You know, don't ever just listen to what you hear on this program and run off into the woods wringing your hands and screaming into the night. Of course, I find myself doing that quite a bit. You know, research it yourself. Over at Daily Kos, there is an article today that is similar, not in as great a detail, but contains the expectation of a similar outcome if this thing is not capped. Now, the Yellowstone caldera, I don't know how many people know what that is. It's spelled C-A-L-D-E-R-A. You can look that one up. Old Faithful is just a little trickle of released energy where it concerns what is below Yellowstone. It is the largest volcano on Earth. Geologists have known about this thing for a long time. I mean, it's just there. There's nothing anyone really can do about it. But if it were to blow, if the Yellowstone caldera were to erupt, explode, it would end life on Earth, period. It would end it. It's over. Now, that's not some plot to a disaster movie. Look it up. Look it up. Use whatever search engine you want. Yellowstone caldera, C-A-L-D-E-R-A. Just look it up. Look it up. And what this engineer is saying is that the amount of oil sitting in this reservoir that BP tapped into has an explosive force at least equal to what would happen if the caldera were to blow. Now, I can't, you know, an extinction level event is something that, oh man, that'd make a hell of a movie. Oh, damn. Any references? What was that movie with Bruce Willis? Was it Bruce Willis? Where they, you know, asteroid is hurtling towards Earth, going to end Earth as they know it, and or we know it, or the whatever. And they get a spaceship and get up there and blow it up. But this is not, you know, it's not a movie plot. It's not, a couple of geologists or engineers sitting around smoking weed saying, hey, let's come up. We know a lot about this stuff. Let's come up with a real disaster movie scenario. Man, we'll all get rich. All right, man, here, try a little bit of this. All right. You know, that's not what this is. And I don't know. You know, we're Americans, so we have the ability to live in a state of denial and avoidance. Probably unlike any culture, any group of people ever in the history of the human race, except maybe the Neanderthals. I don't know. But we have raised denial and avoidance to an art form. And so that's what I'm doing right now. I'm avoiding, except when I do the program, I'm avoiding thinking about this. I am in denial that it's going to be the disaster that it has the potential of being. You know, I just keep saying to myself, no, doop, doop, doop. They'll get it capped. They'll get it stopped. They'll get it this. They'll get it over. It's going to be awful for the folks that live in the Mississippi Delta. It's going to be awful for the people that live in, parts of Alabama. And maybe it'll drift over there to Texas. I've been looking at some of these projections by NOAA about where this thing is going to go in terms of the oil spill. And then I read something like what I just shared with you from Paul Knoll. And about the oil slick represents 20%, 20% of what's already out there. and the fact that it's going to take 10 years. I mean, the Gulf Coast of the United States, the beaches, the fisheries, the livelihood, the ways of life, all of it is over. It's over. It's goddamn over. So I can't, you know, I'm not like, I can't do it. I can't sit here and go, oh yeah, it's over. What I say is, it's over. No, it's not. 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 And I get as quickly as I can into my form of avoidance and denial. No, 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 they'll figure out something. They'll figure out something. They always figure out something. Everybody's always telling me bad stuff. They'll always figure out something. It'll be okay. We'll figure out something. We always figure out something. We're Americans. We'll figure out something. Capitalism will figure out something. Because I can't think about this. This is just like when I read Jonathan Schell's book that I've referenced on this program many times, The Fate of the Earth. No, 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 no. Not going to happen. Not going to happen. And thermonuclear war didn't happen. So this won't either. Right?
My only friend, the end of our elaborate love, the end of everything that stands.
Better stand back. Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Nothing lasts forever but the earth and sky.
It's about 9 before the hour. I got an email here from John in North Central Texas. John writes, Mike, I'm in North Central Texas, real oil country. I put in 20 years in the oil field, 5 of those with Halliburton Oil Field Services. Lots of family members work in the patch, as do many people I know. I've talked to lots of people about the Gulf spill. At this point, I'm ready to say that nothing I hear in the media concerning the oil spill makes any sense at all. I swear it's starting to feel like 9-1-1 again, or 9-11 again. 210,000 gallons of oil a day is 145 gallons of oil. Wait a minute. Yeah, it's 145,000 gallons of, wait a minute, let me start over. 210,000 gallons of oil a day is 145 gallons of oil a minute. I can buy a hardware store pump that moves 200 gallons a minute and carry it out by hand. The 5,000 barrel a day number in the media is idiotic. The whispered rumors that the spill is, quote, an order of magnitude greater, end quote, are optimistic. Consider that so-called order of magnitude refers to how many digits, not the number itself. So an order of magnitude greater can be 10 million minus 1 gallon of oil a day. As I said, I suspect this may be optimistic. Roughneckshack.com is a website frequented by drill rig workers, cement crews, and so forth. I was told there was good information there, including an article written by one of the rig workers from the Deepwater Horizon. This morning I attempted to verify this and the site had been aggressively scrubbed. All I found were search engine references. On other sites, pages with links to Roughneck Shack had been scrubbed. Weird. Initially, the garbled accounts on the news and industry rumors suggested that the Deepwater Horizon was setting a cement kickoff plug to begin horizontal drilling into the oil formation, just as the relief well will be drilled. It was reported in the news that the well was in transition from exploratory to production phase. They found oil and decided to go after it. They set a kickoff plug. All right. Then they testified before Congress that they were plugging to abandon the site. That's what all this drilling mud and versus seawater and the riser thing is all about. The story has changed completely. The difference between a kickoff and a surface plug is the difference between full production and abandonment. We live in times of tearjerker media. Who died on the Deepwater Horizon? Where are the interviews with grief-stricken family members? Where are the interviews with survivors replete with harrowing tales? We're talking real ratings drivers, so where is it? Where are the cell phone recordings urging, let's roll? Big question. Who were the executives partying on board that night, and where are they now? Biggest question of all, just how damn much oil is flowing into the Gulf, and do we have any chance to stop it? Sean in North Central Texas. You know, like I say, being the good, true American that I am, I my whole life has been spent being educated to experience avoidance and denial. No matter what it was, in my lifetime, I'm supposed to deny what my rational mind tells me and believe that John Kennedy was shot by Lee Harvey Oswald. I'm supposed to deny all the evidence that 9/11 was the result of 19 hijackers defeating the most sophisticated military force in the history of the human race. I'm supposed to, early in my life, I was to deny that the truth of the war in Vietnam was U.S. imperialism to a degree starting to equal the terror committed against the Jews during World War II. I'm supposed to deny that. I'm supposed to avoid thinking about the 300,000 that we killed in Central America so that corporate America could have free access to that region's resources. Avoidance and denial is something that if you are going to be an American, I mean a native-born American, grow up in this society, partake of the education system and all the benefits of living in a insane, consumer-driven, give-me-more situation, then you have to live in a sphere of complete avoidance and denial. You deny what you're doing to the earth. You avoid thinking about the consequences. And I'm using the wrong pronoun there. The pronoun I should be using is I, not you. I mean, that's what I was taught. Now, I didn't realize it at the time. See, that's the benefit of living past a certain age and still being able to think. You can look back and take a look at what you were taught, what you were taught to believe in, what you were taught was immutable truth, what you were taught that if you did not believe in it, you were a traitor to your own country. And you can look at all that from the perspective of your own history, and you can say, son of a bitch, was I really, really that brainwashed? And the answer that comes back, yes. Now, if you're a teabagger, of course, you're focused on more important things like, where is Barack Obama's birth certificate? Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. I just switched over to CNN, Anderson Cooper's 360. And they have the banner on the bottom of the screen. Breaking news. Gulf oil spill could be much worse than believed. He's talking with Steve Wehrle, professor at Purdue University. Let's listen a little bit of this. Can you bring it up a little bit?
And that's what I've done. So, Doug, certainly moving forward, I mean, all of this talk of 210,000 gallons a day, 5,000 barrels a day, I mean, people just got to stop using those numbers.
The numbers are wrong. We've got to stop using them, and we've got to stop relying on British Petroleum. We need transparency, not cover-up. And as the professor said, we need our best oceanographers or experts on the site. British Petroleum's kind of done the quarantine. They really don't want people looking at what they're doing. But we're now so far down the line here, they've got to forget all of those legal fig leaves, stop worrying about being sued, and really open this up. We have a lot of great people that work in Houston and at universities that want to get in there and help solve this problem. But British Petroleum has been blocking people, saying we've got it under control. And as we know, they don't. And they're running a misinformation campaign.
I've got to leave it there. Doug Brinkley, appreciate it. Again, Professor Stephen Wehrle, thank you for your expertise tonight. Thank you. Alarming stuff. Incredible stuff. Let us know what you think. The live chat is up and running at ac360.com.
Poor Anderson Cooper. Yeah, Professor Steve Wehrle from Purdue University on the phone, and his guest, I'm not sure who the guest was, but they were saying essentially, not specifically, but essentially what Mr. Noel was saying in the article that I shared with you over the past hour and a half. So the question I have right now, and I want to stay on this topic. I invite your phone calls, but I want to stay on this topic because what I want to know is if you think, from your perspective, that are we, some of us, like me, overreacting to this with this Armageddonist rhetoric, this apocalyptic talk, this, oh my God, it's like the Yellowstone caldera. Oh my God, it's an extinction level event. Oh my God, there could be trillions of barrels. I got an email from Michael in Roswell. Among other things, pointed out that the known reserves are only maybe 1.5 trillion barrels on Earth. But the key word there is known. The known reserves, you know, I don't know. I guess geologists, engineers in the field of geology, oil exploration, were surprised to find this. The irony to me is, I think this is true, it's not very far from where the extinction level event occurred 65 million years ago, where the scientists are pretty much in agreement, a huge asteroid slammed into the Gulf off the coast of Yucatan, and the result was the extinction of about, 95% of all life on Earth. It took a long time to recover. Supposedly the end of the dinosaurs, or am I getting my extinction level events confused? So here's my question, and we'll take your calls. 877-996-2556. Do you think that there is overreaction on the part of some people, myself included, about how this is going? Do you think that this is, you know, it's an oil spill, Malloy, for Christ's sake. You know, it's a blowout. It's a gusher. Stuff happens all the time. Come on, man. Relax. Hey, chill, Mike Malloy. You're getting your blood pressure up. I don't know. What do you think? So anyway, as the author of the piece that I was sharing with you said, Noel said, who knows about this stuff? you know, speculation. He's coming at it from his perspective. He seems to have some credibility on these issues. He talks about pounds per square inch and pressure and so on and so forth. I don't know. Is the guy just some kind of a flake? Is he just making stuff up? Is this just nonsense that he's pulling out of thin air or out of one of his body openings? You know, who knows? But we do know that BP is lying through its ass. We know that. BP has been lying about this since day one, since before day one. We know that. We also know this, that apparently, and I say apparently because who knows? I mean, maybe the proprietary interests of BP has prevented engineers and scientists and geologists and oil experts from capping this monster weeks ago. You know, who knows? But isn't it time to grab everybody at BP and lock the sons of bitches up and then as a holding, you know, lock them up as material witnesses? That's all. Just material witnesses. Come on. Just material witnesses. Lock them up as material witnesses so they can't go anyplace. Not that there's any place to go. And then turn this over to everybody on earth who understands what the hell is going on and how to stop it. Or do we just practice more avoidance and denial and parse the words and guess, well, maybe this guy's right. Well, maybe that one's wrong. Well, maybe the Army has an idea. Well, how about the Coast Guard? No, how about the National Guard? I know. Let's put out, let's put out great big bags of hair. Oh, I know. Let's, little bit of bum, bim, bam, boo, boo. In the meantime, this just goes on. So what do you want to do? What do you want to do? Want to talk about the particulars or guess or do some avoidance and denial or, you know what I'm saying? Mark is in San Francisco listening on Green 960. Hey, Mark.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Pretty good. Maybe this is God's way of punishing people for voting for Republicans like Bush and Cheney. And maybe when that oil washes on the shore, they'll think about Bush, Cheney, and Palin and the Republican Party that's going to try to get the BP out of this by paying anything. And maybe it's going to send a message. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, no, I don't think that at all. No matter what the outcome is, there's not a teabag freak or Republican or right-winger who will ever have the integrity or the common sense or the logic to put the responsibility for this, a part of the responsibility, where it absolutely goes. And that is on the deregulation movement in this country that started with Reagan, the meetings that Cheney had in 2001 or 2002, where decisions were made, BP was at those meetings, where decisions were made to absolutely give the middle finger to environmentalists, to regulatory agencies, but it turns out they may have given the middle finger to the human race. Of course, Dick Cheney's responsible. Dick Cheney, you know, I've been saying this for 8 years. Dick Cheney is a vampire. He's a murderer. He's a killer. He lives on blood. He doesn't want people to be alive. He wants people to be dead, like he will soon be, because his heart's no good.
You know what, Mike? You're right. I know you're right. And what's so scary is, this Republican Party is so much destruction to this country, and now it looks like the planet. I just, you know, I'm just dumbfounded. I don't know where to go. I don't know.
I don't either.
We have people in this country that just can't see what the Republicans have done to us. They just can't see it. It drives me crazy.
I know.
And what they're going to do to us if we let them get in there anymore. I just...
I know the thing is, let him get in there anymore. Mark, the way things look, the people of the United States, 60% of whom don't believe in the theory of evolution, the people of the United States want Republicans back in office. So, you know, based on that, that's where I step out of my denial and avoidance and say, you know, we're kind of screwed. We're really kind of screwed. Mark, I got to leave it there. Thanks.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you.
Anyone past the hour, email from Michael. The asteroid event that supposedly caused the extinction of the dinosaurs did occur about 65 million years ago. The 95% extinction event you're referring to, I think, is the so-called KT event, which occurred about 250 million years ago. And latest geological strata data seem to suggest that event occurred because of a long series, several thousand years worth of volcanic eruptions along a volcanic rift in what is now Northeast Russia. Important to keep these things in perspective. Okay. Where are we? We're up here. Carl is in Olympia, Washington. Hey, Carl.
Hey, Mike. As you were reading, the letter.
From Noel?
Right, right. I went over to Pure Energy Systems just because I'm inquisitive. And I came across, no joke, Goldman Sachs shorted Gulf of Mexico. I don't know if you saw that, but that's infuriating.
Now, what is it again?
Oh, it says Goldman Sachs shorted Gulf of Mexico, where they placed... Goldman Sachs placed shorts on Transocean stock. This is on PESN.com.
Oh, yeah?
It's towards the top of the page.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It's like another 9/11 or another crisis, like a housing bubble. You know, prior to 9/11, they sold airline stock.
Well, I don't know what to make of that. I really don't. I have to say I'm probably not surprised.
Well, I think that it's, I know that you jog, and I don't know if this is going to take down the air oxygen capacity of the planet, but I think it's about time to say good night, Gracie.
Yeah, it just might be. Thanks, Carl. I appreciate it. I think. Eric is in Brownsville, Texas?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Eric.
Hello, Mr. Malloy.
Hi.
I love your show. You're a real truth teller.
Okay.
The reason I'm calling is that I'm very suspicious of the way that they're spraying all these dispersants on this oil spill. It seems to me that the thing to do would be to put coagulants on so they could scoop it up and get rid of it.
Uh-huh.
It seems to me that what might be going on is just some attempt to try to make it seem as if the spill isn't as bad as it actually is.
Well, I'm sure that's there also, Eric, because... you know, whether you agree or disagree with my point of view, it's only my point of view about the predatory nature of capitalism, all capitalism, and especially the predatory nature of the so-called energy industry, whether it's nuclear, oil, natural gas, coal. You know, all of it is not designed. I'm not talking about intent now. I'm talking about design. It's not designed to provide this wonderful life for the people who benefit from coal, oil, nuclear energy. It is designed to kill everything on Earth. That's what it's designed to do. Now, the intent of the energy company executives may not be global murder. But it doesn't make any difference what their intent is. I mean, these are not, supposedly, these are not stupid people. I mean, You know, we have MIT graduates and Purdue University graduates who get into, we have geologists who get into, energy exploration, who get into mining and drilling and, so on and so forth. And one assumes that they understand all of these issues and how one foul up, one major mistake can result in what we're seeing in the Gulf, under certain circumstances. Now, to gamble with the lives of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, so these predatory sons of bitches can drill and punch a hole in the bottom of the ocean. I mean, who checked with the people along just the Gulf Coast, the people now who are going to be without businesses, without livelihood for the rest of their lives? Who checked with them and said, look, here's the potential for a disaster. It's at X percent. Do you think it's okay for us to go ahead and drill? Who asked these people? Nobody did. Because this is capitalism. Capitalism hates human life. Before the hour, a couple of emails here from Marianne, who is a physicist, one of our bureau chiefs back in the days when we had bureaus up in, all around the planet. Marianne, I think, is she a nuclear physicist? I think so. Sorry. I'm sorry, Marianne. Anyway, she was our Aurora, Illinois bureau chief. She writes, you are not exaggerating. This is huge and life-altering. I can't see how the Gulf isn't a vast dead zone for years to come. If this oil travels up the Gulf Stream, then all the eastern seaboard is a dead zone as well. Of course, BP has been lying. What sane person thinks otherwise now? And the Obama administration's current failure is in not preparing us for how bad this really is. We've wasted the last three decades worth of the cheap oil doing nothing significant toward developing sustainable energy sources. Our willful ignorance will result in generations of suffering and a much diminished carrying capacity of this planet for human existence. I'll be cutting any further arguments concerning global climate short from now on. Disaster happens, waiting for the definitive answer before ceasing destructive behavior. Might be a good time for the U.S. to formally recognize the world court. It wouldn't be a bad idea to migrate toward being vegetarian or vegan. Some of us have ideas for technologies to get us away from oil, but I have no idea if we're too late. Marianne. Kate writes, Mike, I guess my denial mechanism doesn't work as well as it should. We are at the beginning of a way of life. I cried in the grocery store yesterday when I looked at the tray of fresh seafood on ice. My heart is still in Dixie. I can't stop thinking about the middle-aged Vietnamese man in his white van on Highway 90 out by the Walmart turnoff in Ocean Springs, Mississippi. He and his family were boat people. They became successful shrimpers. He sold medium shrimp for $4 a pound and jumbo for $6. Better shrimp I've never eaten. Now he and his family have had their lives destroyed again. I shudder when I think of the time that the media will finally release the fact that the slick has hit the loop. That will be the end of the palm trees on the coast of Devon in Cornwall. This is almost too much grief to bear in one 24-hour day. I'm frantically looking for distractions. As of today, I can only cook a nice breakfast with intent and consideration, exercise, and commit to treating everyone I encounter with respect. Oh, yes, and tell folks close to me that I love them. Often. Kate. Christine writes, Mike, it's too big to get my head around. I can only focus on small aspects of this catastrophe. Last week I heard you mention the loss of the manatees, docile, friendly, curious herbivores, who are affectionate toward people they know. I read a story once about a man who had been researching manatees for 10 years. A photographer was taking pictures and saw a familiar manatee. The researcher had given all of them names. The story was that the manatee placed her flippers on either side of the photographer's face and planted a big kiss on his face mask. Envisioning the loss of these animals made me cry. I feel like one of the people in the movie On the Beach, that old movie with Gregory Peck and Ava Gardner, about the last survivors of a nuclear war. They were living out the end of their days with the sure knowledge that their inevitable end was near. I made my husband listen to that first article that you read by Mr. Noel. I listened to you live and often listen again from a Portland, Oregon radio station. He listened to that reading and then said, "We're doomed." I replied, "What if we're not? Here we are, two senior citizens with four children who are raising our two, soon to be three, grandchildren. We can do what we can do about this. We need to get involved in new ways to make the world at least livable for them. We don't have to work anymore, and we have the time. We have enough health to do something, but what? This situation is so immense, it's beyond my ability right now to see where to focus my energy. I must do what I can do, even if it is a little. I can't not do what I can, but what? Ideas are welcome. Christine." Gene is in San Francisco listening on Green 960. Hey, Gene.
Oh, hi, Mike.
Hi.
I'll take that extinction speculation, and I'll raise you a New World Order speculation. If my speculation is correct, and if this is Rockefeller Bunch's new Pearl Harbor II event, at some point, the corporate media will switch from quiet, measured bits and pieces, little items on the spill, to the end of the world screaming media frenzy.
Yeah? It'll just be one big party.
We'll be told that the only solution is one world government to coordinate and save us.
Might not be a bad idea.
Well, the way I see this bunch, they always figure out a way to turn everything to try to get what they've wanted all along.
Well, you know, by this bunch, I'm sure you mean the people who run global or international capitalism.
Yes.
A lot of whom are rooted here. There's some rooted in China, rooted in Europe, rooted in Russia. They always get what they want, which is everything.
Well, you know, they really tried that climate change scenario. You know, they were trying to get everybody to hop on board with that. And, you know, it didn't really get a fire under most people.
That's because most people can't think in those terms, and unless something is smacking them in the face constantly, most people say, well, this is not my problem, or, no, I'm sorry, it's got to be somebody's BS. You know, if hundreds and hundreds of scientists from around the world say, look, we have the scientific proof if you want to look at it, and people say, nah, come on, stop it, that's not happening. I mean, what are you going to do?
But this, you can't get away from this one.
Well, no, we can't get away from it. And we couldn't get away from the threat of nuclear annihilation, and which still exists, by the way. And we can't get away from the threat of a global overpopulation and mass starvation. We can't get away from any of it. I maintain that there are ways to, there must be ways to deal with these seemingly horrific scary extinction-level events, but we choose not to. We spend too much time worrying about the predators who are eating Wall Street, or we worry about whether or not Barack Obama is from Kenya or the United States, or we, you know, that kind of madness. All right, thanks, Gene. I appreciate you checking in. Tom is in Las Vegas listening on Sirius. Hey, Tom.
Tom?
Yes. Is it Tom?
Yes, this is Tom.
Hi.
Okay, listen, this Gulf disaster,
mm-hmm.
it's a disaster.
Right.
And I pulled out my old Doors album, and they told me I can't read poetry over the air. Maybe I can refer to this, the song When the Music's Over,
uh-huh.
the seventh verse.
Right.
And it starts out, what have we done to the earth?
Right.
Now, can I keep on going with that?
Well, I'd rather hear what you've got to say rather than, you know, quote some poetry, Tom.
Okay, well, listen, you know, do people realize just what a disaster this is?
No, of course not.
I realize it, you know.
I'm kind of a
techno geek, you know. and I know what's going on here. And, you know, everybody's trying to deny it, and they're trying to downplay it. But we got a really emergency going on here. And, you know, they have meetings trying to point the finger of blame to everybody. And I say, you know, let's cut this stuff out, you know. We need to get down there and fix it. And I'm not sure if we have the technology to do it, you know.
Well, I think we do. If not the technology, thanks, Tom. If not the technology, I think we have the minds. Back in the early 40s, we didn't have the technology, but we had the minds, and the minds decided that we had to develop controlled nuclear reactions so that we could develop this huge, massive weapon, because the Nazis were going to get it if we didn't. And all we had, and don't y'all hold me to this specifically, but all we had at the time was theoretical physics that may or may not have worked. In fact, when in Chicago, under the stadium there, when that first controlled nuclear reaction was initiated, there was debate as to whether or not it would be a controlled reaction at all, that it might just keep going until the entire, every atom that makes up the globe and all parts of the globe just blew into thermonuclear fire. So we have the minds that can handle, I think, every single problem that we have created. These problems were created. They were created by us, whether it's overpopulation or global warming or holes in the seabed or whatever it is. This is stuff we created. No one's getting high. Everybody's flying. I'll never touch the sky. There's UFOs over New York, and I ain't too surprised. Ten before the hour, Marianne wrote in. She's a particle physicist, not a nuclear physicist. But she writes, I may become one, nuclear. The idea my group is trying to develop is a type of nuclear reactor based on thorium, not uranium or plutonium, whose chain reactions are initiated and controlled by intense particle beams, such as are being developed in Fermilab, to eventually overtake the current big particle smasher in Geneva, Switzerland. Our fundamental research facilities like Fermilab will need to engage in real-world problems in order to survive. the moral equivalent of the Cold War, which kept all manner of physics research, most of it not related at all to weapons, alive. Marianne. There's more emails here, but let me go back to some phone calls. Oh, God. Rob is in Chicago.
Yeah. Mike, it's a pleasure to talk to you. I was going through the channels, and I just could not believe what you said.
All right. Well, I'll take it somewhere else, Rob. I'm not interested, okay? You guys have got to come up with some original BS opening lines. You know, seriously, all you right-wing trolls out there who listen to this program religiously, and you finally work up your courage to call, you've got to come up with something other than, I was just going through the channels, and I heard you, and I can't believe what you said about fill in the blank. Stop it, okay? Stop it. Come up with a different opening line. Try something else, because as soon as you say that, you're gone. Because I know you're lying. Thank you. Nathan is in Olympia, Washington. Hey, Nathan.
Hello, Mike. Pleasure to speak with you, and thanks for all that you do. And as soon as I get home this evening, I will be subscribing to the podcast. Your voice is a beacon that needs to be supported, and even more so as we go forward after this disaster.
Well, that's very kind. I especially appreciate the idea of subscribing to the podcast.
Oh, no, absolutely. I get it. Anyway, I really think... And this is not my original idea. I heard somebody else describing this for another event, but I think no less impactful, potentially. I think we ought to be just lighting up the White House switchboard. We ought to be emailing. We ought to just inundate all the supposed powers that be with outrage about this. Time is a-wasting, and we got precious little of it to do something effective to turn this thing around as best we can.
Mm-hmm.
Why there is not, well, I don't question why there's not outrage. If you look at the minimal coverage and the lack of depth of coverage of something that has the major, major impact, nothing we've ever seen, we've got nothing to compare it to, we probably never will have anything else to compare it to. But why there is not just absolutely bursting at the seams. We ought to be marching on freaking Washington right now. This is insane that this is going on like this and that they're just letting it go. I just can't. Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable.
It is. And I also think that the response from everybody, not just those of us who should be taking this to the streets, but from everybody. And thanks, Nathan. Let me move on because we're about out of time here. The response from everybody has been minimal at best or non-existent on average. And nobody, this, even though BP has been controlling the information and has been lying through its filthy teeth, this disgusting, contemptible corporation, aside from that, there is enough observation. There is enough evidence, just from the videos, from the flyovers, from the Army Corps of Engineers, whoever, there's enough evidence available to completely, prove the fact that BP is lying about this, has been lying since day one. But that is the nature of capitalism. Capitalism always lies. It never tells the truth. Because it doesn't deal in truth. It deals in exploitation. It deals in deception. It deals in eventually in extinction. That's what capitalism is. So the thing that is really, really getting to me now, we're starting the fourth week, aren't we, of this catastrophe. Government, academia, industry, we the people, nobody's doing anything. I'm not talking about these half-ass attempts. They're going to stuffing mattresses down this thing or garbage or whatever. You know, not that. I'm talking about we have not motivated. We have not been, we got motivated when we thought Hitler was going to get a bomb. Then we got real goddamn motivated, didn't we, huh? And the best minds in America went to work. This event has a potential at least equal to that. And what are we doing? On the one hand, it's astonishing that that's our reaction. On the other hand, it's almost an expected reaction from people in this country, institutions in this country. We simply don't care. And it's not because we're necessarily amoral. It's because we are stupid. We are ignorant. And we revel in the ignorance. We wallow in it. Hate to leave you like this. Rode hard and put up wet. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.